Well, already, gang, welcome back to the Act of Self-Protection podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Wolliver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today, a new friend of mine. Her name is Lynette. Lynette hails from Southern California, not too far from where I used to live and where the lovely and fetching Mrs. Wolliver has a whole bunch of family. We'll tell you about more about that later. She is in hospital administration. She is married, happily married. She assures me of this and has two little boys. Lynette, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I appreciate it. So full disclosure, I made her sit around for an hour on a call that I wasn't on because I don't understand how time zones work. So apologies to Lynette for that. She's been very patient and very kind with me. So Lynette, when you wrote into me, and I told you this in our very brief pre-interview, you wrote into me and the email described, you know, an outline roughly of the story of what happened and sort of a little bit before and after it. And if it's the first time that reading an email from a potential guest, I got chills when I read it, and we'll get more into it later about that. But it was remarkable. Well written, by the way. You should be an author. And I just appreciate that you're willing to come on and do this. It takes courage to come on and talk to, you know, all these people, you know, in this audience or whatever, but I appreciate your willingness to do it. So, before this incident happened, you and your husband were already, at least maybe he a little bit more than you at the time, sort of self-defense minded. He was at the time a CCW holder. And you said you guys were discussing whether or not you should get a CCW before the incident. How would you describe your sort of state of mind as it relates to your own self-defense, paying attention to your surroundings, locking doors, stuff like that?
Yeah. So at that time, my husband was pushing me to get my CCW. And the reason for that is because we live in a high crime area. Mm-hmm. And I run every single morning or close to at 4 a.m. And it's by myself. I do take my dog with me, but he's like, you need to start looking into this. And so I said I would start looking into it, and I did. But I wanted to do all my research on my own. I wanted to, you know, really read into everything and make sure that it is a good fit for me. So that's what I actually started viewing these videos. And then I started listening to the podcast because I felt like there was other options.
And there are.
Right. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start carrying pepper spray. I start learning my street names as I run through them. And I started looking into what type of guns would work for me. And I started reading, you know, well, am I capable of taking a life as part of the CCW process? And at that day, actually, I was really struggling with that. And I came to terms that, you know what, I'm not able to take a life. It's not going to be a fit for me. I don't think I have it in me to do this take a life.
I commend you for that. What we talk about, you probably heard us talk about it on the badge cams or on the podcast. I commend you because that is literally the conversation that I recommend people should have with themselves before they go buy a gun and start carrying it, or before they become a police officer or join the military. Am I capable of that? And your answer at the time was no, and that's okay. There's no shame in it. But I do want to recharacterize something you said. I feel like when you are using a firearm or any other weapon for that matter, you know, it could be a knife for all we know, whatever weapon you're using to defend yourself from, you know, grievous bodily injury or death, you're not shooting that person with the intent on killing them. At least that's the way I look at it. I'm shooting them until they stop doing what they're doing, until they stop trying to kill me or someone that I love or an innocent third party. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
So would you say that we'll get to that later, actually. The incident that happened wasn't that long ago, right? This was in the last year or so?
It was, yeah. So it happened about 7 months ago.
Okay. And kind of walk us through what's going on. I know a little bit of the story because you told me already, but you're home, kids are home, yeah. Husband's not. Kind of walk us through that evening and what went on.
Yeah. So my husband works rotating shifts. So he's home, hit and miss, depending on his work schedule. Mm-hmm. So this particular night, it's only myself and my two small kids in the house. And it's around 11:30, midnight, 12:30, sometime around there.
Right.
And I'm asleep in my bed. And I'm woken up because I can hear my dogs barking. And that's not common for them to do that at night.
Can I ask what kind of dogs? Are we talking about big German Shepherds or like Chiweenies or what's something in between?
Yes. So I have a big German Shepherd. She's about 80 pounds. And then I have a pit bull lab mix and she's pushing about 95 pounds.
Bad. Not bad. Better than we have a Chihuahua wiener dog mix who's no help aside from being annoying and loud. But yeah. German Shepherd bark is, in my opinion, the premier. We called it tweaker be gone when we lived in California because our German Shepherd would bark that would in a way that would make your blood run cold. It was terrifying to hear. So dogs start barking. What happens then?
I get out of bed because I know it's not normal for them to bark at night. And I walk maybe 10 steps and I walk to the desk and that's where I have my charging station with my cell phone. So the phone ring and it's my husband and he says, there's a guy in the driveway, get the gun. So I placed my cell phone down on the desk and I spun and I got into our quick release closet, mm-hmm. picked up my shotgun. It's fully loaded, semi-automatic. And I call it mine because I have a pistol grip that helps me with the kickback.
Okay.
So I pick up the shotgun, go to the window, and I see there's a guy in the driveway, and he's on a bicycle, and he's standing on his bicycle pedals, and he's looking over the fence, my backyard fence, at the dogs that are barking at him.
He is not by any chance wearing a white button-down shirt with a tie and a black name tag that says Church of Jesus. Correct? No?
Not at all. No. He's the typical gangbanger that you see in this area.
When I read your email, as soon as you said guy on a bike, I'm like, I'll tell you a quick story as an aside. Hold that thought for 1 second. So we had something unofficially in California when I worked in San Diego. We called it the 25-50 rule. And this was, I think, made up by my friend Mike Haynes. But the rule is if you're out and about, especially during daylight hours, actually, and you see a person over the age of 25 operating a bicycle worth less than $50, the odds of that person being on parole or probation is like 98%. So we called it the 25-50 rule. My kids even know what that means. They'll call out one like 25-50 if they see it like here in Tucson. So you see this guy, you don't see this guy. Your husband sees the guy, or do you see the guy? I lost track.
Well, now that he told me to look at the driveway, I'm looking at the driveway and there's a guy on a bike.
And it's immediately, this guy's a dirtbag. This is not a Boy Scout, right? This is a bad guy.
No, we are located up on a hill. So there's no reason for anybody to just happen upon our house.
Right.
So he's up on the pedals of his bike, looking over the fence, looking at the dogs that are barking at him. And as he's driving up, he has to make a turn because he's going to hit the garage at this point. And as he's making that turn, he notices that my bedroom window is cracked. So in the summer months, we have a whole house fan and with that, you have to have a couple windows cracked. And this window's cracked.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah. So this window is cracked maybe an inch or two at most. And I could see his eyes and he's looking at my bedroom window that's cracked, and he doesn't know on the other side of it, our house has mirrored tint all the way around the entire house.
Right.
So I'm looking at him. He's looking at this crack, and he pedals closer to my bedroom window where this crack is. And I can see that he's going to attempt to get to this window. He's going to attempt to pry the screen off and get to the window. So I still have my shotgun in my hand. I just shoulder it, make it snug, take the safety off, raise it. And I'm thinking, I'm going to blow this guy's head off. There's no way this guy is coming in my house and getting access to my kids.
Right.
So he's at this window now, and I'm quiet. My cell phone, I didn't even have a chance to put it on speaker. So my husband's just watching it through the security cameras. What's going on?
I can't even imagine how that must have felt.
And I have my shotgun shouldered, and he's right on the other side of this window. And my dogs realize what's going on. Mm-hmm. So my dogs run from the backyard to the porch, through their doggy door, through the kitchen, through the living room, all the way to my bedroom. And they jump on top of the desk that overlooks this window. And
wow.
They are going to rip this guy's face off.
Right.
He gets scared, falls down, because he was still like, on the bike, he's like tangled up. So he hops back up all the way and he starts pedaling down the driveway, and he makes a right. So at this point, I pick up my phone, put the shotgun down. I'm still holding it, but now I'm not, I don't have it raised at the window anymore.
Right.
And I watch him. We're on a corner lot, so I can watch him go all the way around. And when he gets to the front of my house, that's when I realized there's two other dudes there standing on the sidewalk.
Wow.
And then that's when I got scared.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see those two other guys. I only saw the one guy on a bike.
I dare say that if the one guy on the bike had made it through the window, the sound of that shotgun discharging probably would have scared his friends off. Probably. There's no guarantee. But yeah, when the point at which I was startled reading your email was when your husband said, "Hey, there's somebody outside, gets a gun." That couldn't have been a good feeling. But just hearing the way you're describing it, realizing that he has two accomplices and this wasn't just a single person, and that you didn't know that, what was running through your head at the moment you realized, okay, there was three of these guys and I didn't know it?
That's when the fear kicked in, when I noticed there was two other guys. But I'm thinking, there's no way these guys are getting in my house. That's the end of the story. There's no way that I'm going to let these guys have access to my kids ever.
So people often debate the Second Amendment, right? The Second Amendment was not put into place to help moms alone defend their house and their children. That wasn't its original purpose. It is a wonderful side effect, however, of the purpose of the Second Amendment. And there is no other thing on earth that can equalize. I can only see your head and face. I assume you're average size, average build, right? I mean, you're not too big, not too small. There's nothing that can equalize an average-sized woman with her two kids and three adult hardened criminals than a firearm. There is no other. If you know of a better thing, then you tell me. But a shotgun in the hands of a mom who is now defending her children, tell me a better way for her to equalize those odds. Because otherwise, if she is disarmed, which is how a lot of California is, then those guys do come in, and you fill in the blank with what you think is going to happen next. And it's not good.
No.
None of it's good. And, you know, the fact that your husband was, how far away was he if he wanted to?
He was several cities away. There is no way that he could have gotten here. There is no way that I could have gotten the cops here to deal with it.
Yeah, talk to us about that, because you said either you or a neighbor had called in a burglary in progress at one point from what you described. And what was the response when you called 911 for that?
Yeah, so I...
This is a different time, yeah.
Yeah, it's a high crime area. But you deal with it as best as you can so that you're not scared. So I know what our neighborhood is, being, you know, in San Bernardino County. So you take precautions and you're not stupid. Our neighbors look out for each other and you keep your doors locked. You carry pepper spray. You don't walk around with earbuds in your ears. You keep your head up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So on one of my runs, I am running and I see two guys attempting to pry open this garage. And I know that there's a family that lives inside there because I see them go off to work around the time I'm finishing my run. I know those guys aren't that family.
Right.
So I slowly turn around and I run the opposite way. And I call 911. It rings for 5 minutes. And it's just busy. It's just a busy signal for 5 minutes.
Wow.
So at that point, I'm like, okay, well, I need to run away. So I run completely opposite direction. And 911 calls me back. So I'm describing to the operator what happened and where I am and where they need to be. And she says, well, can you go back there and meet the officers? No, I cannot.
No.
And if the police showed up, it would have been at least an hour response time because right. I would have seen them on my run and they weren't there. They didn't even answer the phone.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You did have one positive thing to say about the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department. You want to talk about that now?
Yeah. So we have a great sheriff, Sheriff Shannon Dykus. He wants the residents to be safe. He wants people to go out there and get their CCW. And after this experience, I realized that I need to not worry about taking the life of a bad guy. And I need and having to deal with that emotionally. Because if something happened and I had to take that life, that's better than leaving my kids defenseless. And if I have the tools and the ability, then I need to utilize those. Because it's going to feel a lot better if I stuck my head. It would feel a lot worse if I stuck my head in the sand, something happened to my kids just because I didn't pursue my CCW.
Right. Yeah, all of the bad things that attend a post-shooting period in your life are only possible because you're not dead. You know, the only way to have PTSD is if you don't get killed in the process. The only way to have, you know, all the things that go, the hypervigilance and the nightmares and, you know, the depression are still better than your last thought being, you know, my kids don't have a mom anymore. The last thing you think ever in your life is my kids are without a mother now. And by the way, what's about to happen to them, you know, now that these guys are in my house and my kids are now alone with these hardened criminals.
Yeah.
Do you know I assume you're in the process or you've gotten your CCW or you're in the process to get your CCW right now?
Yeah. So I'm in the process. I'm waiting for my sheriff's interview, which okay. is a little nerve wracking, but fine. My application's in.
if the sheriff himself is is pro CCW and pro Second Amendment, then I don't imagine probably the interview will be terribly adversarial. I'm sure they're just going to, you know, make sure you're not a crazy person. I'm not a fan. Look, I'm kind of a Second Amendment absolutist. I'm not a fan of there being any hurdles in between you, you know, someone in your position. Let's say you were a single mom and, you know, you've got this ongoing problem, or you have an ex threatening you or whatever. You can't carry a gun until you go through this long, lengthy process. That's a problem, in my opinion. So I hate the idea that you have to go and have an interview in the first place. You know, we, like John likes to say, if it pleases the crown, I would like to be able to defend myself against, you know, the criminals in my neighborhood. And of course, then the frustration is, well, the same entity, the same government that is making me wait around to get, you know, to be able to defend myself effectively with a firearm is the same government that is utterly failing. And I don't mean to be a political, I don't like politics, but is utterly failing to protect the citizens. They're failing to keep bad guys in jail. They're failing to fund the police in a way they can do their jobs effectively. The fact that you had a busy signal on 911 is preposterous to me. That should never, ever happen. We should have plenty of 911 dispatchers and plenty of deputies and paramedics and everything else. What would you say to someone, especially a woman out there listening to this, who's on the fence, who's considering it, you know, but she's just not sure if it's the right thing for her to do? What would you say to that person if you were just sitting at a coffee shop talking to them?
I would say pursue it up until you get to the point where you feel like, no, I can't do this. And the way I say that is, like, my roadblock was, I don't think I can take a life. And I wasn't going to back off of it. I was just going to sit with it at that point and see how I felt about that decision.
Okay.
So I see a lot of women and a lot of mama bears. Their first response to something bad is to call 911. And right. I mean, from a young age, we're always told, call 911, call 911, call 911. But right. When you birth those babies, your first priority is your kids. So if you're in a bad situation, first deal with the situation and then call 911. Because you're there and you can make a difference right then.
Yeah. Like John and I like to say, you know, we always harp on when a police officer is involved in a shootout, a shooting, and the first thing they do is get on the radio and yell, shots fired, officer needs help or whatever. And the point we always make, I don't know if you've seen any of the badge cam videos, the point we always make is, look, your backup could be two blocks away and this is going to be over before they get there. And anyone who thinks that, you know, a determined intruder is somehow not going to get in or somehow not going to get to you in the time that it takes the police to arrive, figure you got to make the call. They have to answer the call for starters. And then you have to give them information. They have to start typing. That computer is connected to another computer with another dispatcher who's now talking to the officer in the field, playing the most protracted game of telephone of all time. You're hoping to get it right. You're hoping to get the address right. You're hoping they have officers available or they're not at shift change and they're all 10 miles away. 911's great and all, and the police would love to be everywhere at once. They would love to protect all the people all the time, but it's just not possible. One of our early episodes with three different female self-defenders, and the title of the episode was No One's Coming to Save You. And I think that would be a good title for this one as well. I heard the dogs barking a few minutes ago. I assume they're protesting the fact that while they're the heroes of the story, they're not here for the podcast. Is that probably what's happening?
That's exactly it. They're mad that they're not inside the house. Usually they're in the house, but I kicked them out for the interview. So they're upset with me right now.
They're like, hey, we literally chased those guys off. Why are we not being interviewed right now? We should be on the show. I feel like they should be on the podcast. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Lynette, those are my big girls.
I don't want to leave anything out. Did we miss anything? I think we covered the lessons. Was there anything you wanted to add before we part ways?
No, I just really feel like, politics aside, I feel like in my city, we are not protected. And I feel like the only one that's allowing us to protect ourselves adequately is our sheriff, because he does want us to protect ourselves, and he does advocate for the normal people like me to help with the CCW process. And that's it.
Yeah, I've commented before that previously, a group called San Diego Gun Owners Association down in San Diego County is doing a fantastic job of getting that process streamlined and getting people to actually be able to get their CCWs. One of the previous sheriffs, I can only tell you anecdotally that people that I knew, non-law enforcement people that I knew who had concealed weapons permits and had an ongoing quote unquote need, you know, to carry a gun. I don't think you should have to prove a need, but whatever. One guy owned a small business. He had dealt a lot of cash. So he had, you know, a quote unquote valid reason. None of that had changed. And he went to re-up his CCW permit, his licensing, and he was declined, and they didn't have to give him a reason, and they didn't give him a reason, and he appealed it, and they turned it down. I remember a year later going to our agency's shooting range, which is right next to adjacent to the sheriff's department shooting range. And I knew it was range day for CCW holders because the parking lot was full of Bentleys and Mercedes G-Wagons and Lexuses, Lexi, and all sorts of fancy cars. Now, infer from that what you will about the donor class and who got CCWs when that was going on. I can't prove it, but it occurs to me that what you want is a sheriff like you have who realizes that the voters, he's accountable to the voters, or she in some cases, accountable to the voters, and the voters want to be able to protect themselves. And yeah, politics aside, again, on my end, why would anyone think these policies are good or smart? You know, the idea that you're going to have a revolving door and not keep people in jail who are clearly a threat to the community. I don't care, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever. That doesn't make sense. Shouldn't make sense to anyone. It's your community. You're potentially going to be a victim of one of these people that we're not putting away. All right, I'll get off my soapbox. Lynette, I can't thank you enough. I know this wasn't easy for you. So, folks, do me a favor. Leave a comment. Leave a suggestion. Leave a 5-star review. Tell Lynette what a fantastic job she did, because she was a little nervous coming into this, but you did a great job. So thank you so much for reaching out, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.